So again, I'm quoting Suzuki Roshi's talk entitled No Trace. When you do something, you should burn yourself completely, like a bonfire, leaving no trace of yourself. Kind of like saying, don't pat yourself on the back. From Genjo Koan, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. When you first seek Dharma, you imagine you are far away from its environs. At the moment when Dharma is correctly transmitted, you are immediately your original self. So, as you can tell, I'm talking about the Buddhist concept of no trace. I asked my AI app, Perplexity, what the term no trace means in Zen Buddhism. He or she or it says, no trace is a profound concept in Buddhism, emphasized in Zen and Mahayana traditions. It points to a way of living and practicing that embodies non-attachment, presence, and the realization of emptiness. Emptiness and non-attachment. No trace signifies a state of emptiness where nothing is held on to, no thought, feeling, or experience is clung to or left behind. This reflects the Buddha's teaching that all phenomena are transient and devoid of inherent lasting substance. Thus, nothing exists that can be affirmed or denied in a permanent way, and we are encouraged not to leave traces of attachment in our actions, thoughts, or identities. I love this concept of no trace in Buddhism. I think it is a core and important subject of and practice. It's worthy of our attention and care. We can practice with it, make vows to make sincere efforts not to leave traces when we say or do something. To me, leaving traces means that we say or do things that are intentionally meant to convey some meaning or attribute or to be helpful. But the person saying or doing the thing is consciously or unconsciously striving for something. Their ego has slipped in. They're not really being their authentic selves. I think people pick up on this, but don't always know why they feel some type of discomfort, like confusion or frustration. This is because the words or action often leave very subtle traces. Even though the words may be true or the actions helpful, something unnecessary is added. The person affected may feel badly that they don't feel appreciative or respectful. Even though the words or actions are true, positive, and helpful, there's something unnecessary added. A couple of years ago, I was out to dinner with friends, and it was a really nice, intimate evening. After paying the bill, everyone was getting ready to leave, and I left first. The next day, I was talking with one of the people that had been there. He said that after I left, they talked for more than an hour, and it was most intimate. For me, this left a trace. It felt like there was some competitive energy in that sharing. but I didn't know if I was projecting or if he was unconsciously doing a kind of boasting. Before every day Zen began, I was a Vipassana practitioner. I was in a small sangha, and the teacher was someone I liked a lot, and she was a very good teacher. At some point, in a very subtle, almost subliminal way, her ego leaked into her teaching. There were more references to various accomplishments and associations with highly regarded Buddhist teachers. As this went on, some people stopped coming to our sittings. I think most of us didn't understand what was going on. We just knew we weren't connecting with what the teacher was saying. I think she was unconsciously seeking approval and admiration, and we were feeling increasingly frustrated and even resentful. We felt we were losing a safe place to practice and where we found refuge. This is a pretty blatant example of how not being in touch with yourself can cause you to leave traces, and how these traces can cause suffering. One time, Norman came to our little group to give a talk. When he finished, the person next to me leaned over to me and whispered, "No trace." That was the first time I had heard that saying. And as you know, Norman's teaching style is truly selfless. He loves to study and talk about Dharma and help us connect it to our practice and lives today. Like all of you, I was drawn to everyday Zen because I'd heard Norman teach and felt nourished and happy when he would finish. Again, like you, I am now equally drawn to everyday Zen because of our Sangha. I have to admit that I feel a lot of attachment. I find refuge in our being together, even on Zoom. When someone leaves traces, I don't think it's intentional or malicious. It's a case of not being mindful of where they're at and their need for something that may not fit the situation. We have to pay attention to what we are about to say or do, and ask ourselves, is it necessary? So, what are some of the ways and situations that cause us to leave traces? The gaining mind, striving for achievement, seeking recognition for a job well done, like cleaning the zendo, or practicing zazen late at night, and finding a way to let others know. When I would hang Tonka paintings in the Zendo at our sessions at Santa Sabina, I always tried to hang them neatly and all at the same level on the walls, and strategically placed each painting in just the right spot. I would try to put Manjushri over Norman and our Shuso. It's a hard job, but it's totally fun. Often, when I'm finished, people would come in and say how wonderful they looked. I would thank them and sometimes add, "Yeah, and it took me 2 hours to get them up." Mentioning the 2 hours is the trace I left. I have to ask myself, why did I say that? It wasn't necessary, it was self-serving. Sometimes this might take away some of the pleasure of just admiring the sacred art. There's something sticky about it. I really try to think about what I want to say and ask myself if it is all necessary or helpful, or if I'm seeking something for myself. when someone is talking about this kind and generous thing so and so had done, instead of feeling grateful that someone had put some kindness out into the world, I might get a twinge of competitive feeling. I think, well, I'm kind and generous. I'll just go out and do the same thing tomorrow. So I do it. And whoever I showed kindness to can feel that it is not a selfless act. I think when we do something helpful to make ourselves feel good, the recipient of our kindness can feel that. It doesn't feel good to them. They may feel patronized or belittled. It takes away the joy they would normally feel that someone showed they cared about them. When pride seeps into our mind, something we say or do will leave a trace. No matter how subtle or indirect, the recipient of our words or action, I believe, can tell on some level that we are sneakily bragging. We believe ourselves when we think, I'm just sharing my experience or being informative. So I now ask myself, what am I about to say and why do I want to say it? Is it pure or is there some tiny motive going on? I can feel it because I'm on the lookout for ways I am speaking or doing things that may benefit me in some way that isn't straightforward. 2 years ago, I received lay entrustment from Norman. This meant that he was entrusting me to teach Dharma. We studied together for about a year and a half. When we first started, I felt proud of myself that I was being trained to be a teacher. And I felt the urge to tell people that I was training with Norman to receive lay entrustment, but I didn't because I knew what was happening with me. I wanted to impress. It would have been totally unnecessary to say that and of no benefit to anyone. After studying Khonsa's Buddhist thought in India and some Dogen fascicles, I was rightly humbled as I struggled to understand and discuss much of the material. And any sense of pride disintegrated. At the ceremony when I received my green rakasu, I looked at what Norman had written on the back. As many of you know, the teacher who you studied with and who helped you prepare for ordination write something personal about and to you on the back of your rakasu. When I first looked to see what Norman had written, I was taken back by the line that said, "No one in particular." I thought, "Aren't I special now that I've been entrusted to teach?" But I then realized that I am no one in particular. I'm a human just like any other human, with my share of good and not so good fortune, and my attributes and faults. Isn't that true for everyone? Someone who's had a lot of difficulties in their life isn't less of a person than someone who's had a pretty easy go of it. Like everyone, I've had difficulty in my life and many joys too. I know that I live a privileged life. I have a 401k, a nice house, and good healthy food. But that doesn't make me any better or more deserving than anyone else. How could it? Thinking I am someone special just creates separation, which is suffering. Maybe Norman wrote that on the back of my rakasu, to remind me not to become attached to any sense of accomplishment. I'm guessing he could see when pride was seeping in. Really, All that this means is that I have some responsibility to support the practice of all my Dharma brothers and sisters. It doesn't mean much about me. Knowing that actually makes me feel free. What about wanting to maintain a good image, that others can see that I am smart, generous, and compassionate? Worrying about what others think of me. All we can do is be our authentic selves and not worry about what others think about us. During Dokusan with Norman at a session several years ago, I said to him that all I wanted from my practice was to get over myself. It's actually very liberating and joyful to let go and just be true and sincere. Nothing added. I got very ill with COVID last July and had to be hospitalized. Within hours of being admitted, Alan called me, sounding quite concerned. Soon after we hung up, I started getting calls from other Sangha members, and it lifted my mood and actually made me feel better physically. And of course, I knew Alan had let some of our mutual friends know about my situation and recommended they call. He never said he had done that, and I wasn't left feeling like I had to call and acknowledge his care and concern. I've seen him jump into action when someone is ill or have some other crisis. He's a hands-on guy who doesn't leave traces. One time, Jean and I were at the Sunday Dharma talk at Green Gulch, and we were sitting on the floor at the front of the zendo where all the people on Zafu sit. A woman in front of us was putting on her sweater while looking up at the speaker. She could not get her arm in one of the sleeves, and I saw Jean lift the opening up, and the woman's hand went right in. The woman did not know that she had been helped, and Jean was simply lifting up a sweater while watching the teacher give the talk. No trace. This seemed to be both of their natures to not be attached to the outcome of their naturally kind and considerate words and actions. Several years ago, I was headed to San Francisco from the East Bay. When I got up to the toll plaza, the man taking our money said, "No, the car in front of you already paid your toll." When I went ahead onto the bridge, the car had sped up and was now far in the distance. It felt magical, and it made me want to go out and be spontaneously generous. So here's some things to try and see how it feels. Make donations anonymously. This one's hard for me. I want the recipient of my generosity to know it was me. But does it really matter? In 12-step programs, participants are instructed to do something kind or generous without the beneficiary knowing you did it. They emphasize that the recipient of your kindness not know who did it. Or leave a gift on someone's doorstep and leave without them knowing you are the one who left it. And I was thinking that wouldn't it be cool to take somebody a birthday present, put it on their porch with a note that just says, "Happy birthday." I mean, is it, think about it, is it absolutely necessary that the person know you gave them the gift? Sometimes it probably is, but often it would just be a magical experience for them. Or the next time you see a homeless person, give them some money without them seeing you do it. It could be a joyful experience for both of you. So all of this that I'm saying, I think, boils down to being mindful and letting go. So I want to close with a poem from Tao Te Ching, which is a central text to the Tao religion, kind of like the Genjo Koan is to Zen. It's titled No Trace. Good walking leaves no footprints. Good talking leaves no confusion. Good action leaves no trace. The best door has no lock yet can't be opened. The best binding has no knots yet can't be untied. In this way, the wise take care of everything, rejecting no one, abandoning nothing. They always follow their inner light. Teaching asleep confuses people who are the beginnings of the good. Those who don't respect and honor teachers, who don't cherish and care for students, no matter how clever and learned, only go astray, creating more confusion. Understanding this and leaving no trace, the wise alone are perfectly blind, seeing clearly into the distance. So I hope that my talk didn't leave traces. Thank you. So we're gonna break up into small groups again, groups of three, and take 4 minutes each and maybe ask someone to keep track of time so everyone gets an equal chance to talk. So you'll have 4 minutes each and then a 3 minute wrap up. And you know, my question is just what you would probably think it would be. And that is, talk about a time when someone has done something or said something, and there was some kind of subliminal knot that just made you uncomfortable. And, you know, try to talk about what you think, where they were coming from, and how it made you feel. Or you can talk about when you have realized that you left a trace, and how you felt about that when you realized it. And if neither of those fit, talk about whatever you want. So we'll see you in 15 minutes.